Welcome to Charlotte Readers Podcast, where authors give voice to their written words. This is the show where we meet Charlotte area authors and those who visit the Queen City, and we hear them read their work. Our sponsor is Park Road Books, the oldest and only independent bookstore in Charlotte. And this is Season 2. Today we have a preview of the 12 authors who appear on the show this season. We also have a remembrance, a dedication, to someone special to me who always enjoyed a good story. And since Charlotte Readers Podcast is all about the stories, let's get to it. I'm your host, Landis Wade. Thank you for listening. Season 2 of Charlotte Readers Podcast is dedicated to Ham Wade, my father, who died on December 22, 2018. He lived a great life, 88 years, almost 89 years. And he passed on with his family surrounding him and an old fraternity brother playing some old songs. Dad loved a good story. He also loved his family. He was very open and accepting. A person that I'll miss dearly. He didn't like a lot of fanfare and once told me he didn't want the kids or anyone saying any personal remarks at his funeral, that the minister would be enough. But we talked and decided that someone who knew him well needed to say something about him so that when you left the funeral, you'd know who we were burying. And so that role fell to me, and I wrote something called Remembering Ham Wade that I read at his service on the Friday after Christmas, and I'm going to read that now as part of this dedication. It's kind of a story as well, so let's get to it. Remembering Ham Wade. What's your name? I watched Dad answer this question over and over again in the last 3 weeks until finally, sadly, he could answer it no more. Along the way, Dad was patient, one of his character traits, but I sensed he was worried about the doctors and nurses because no matter how many times he told them his name, they still couldn't remember it. My name is Ham Wade, he would say, but you can call me Ham. Each time they would ask, how you doing, Ham? I had to smile at the refrain. It was typical Dad, always thinking about others. I'm doing fine, he'd say. How are you? One doctor started laughing. I'm great, Ham. Thanks for asking. But let's talk about you. Since I'm about to do just that, talk about Ham, it's probably a good time for me to interject a disclaimer. My dad would not approve this message. Landis, he told me years ago, I don't want any speeches at my funeral, just the service. That's all we need. He never wanted to be the center of attention, even at his own funeral. He also didn't want to inconvenience you. He's probably watching the clock as I speak. Therefore, in deference to Ham's wishes, I will not give a speech. To start with, I won't go on and on about Ham, the gentleman lawyer, but how he was trusted and respected by his clients and colleagues, and about how he was totally committed to the same law firm for 60 years. Or about how, as the longtime attorney for the county tax office, he was the only lawyer I knew who got really excited about ad valorem tax law issues. I just won't do it. I also won't give a speech about Ham, the humble, unassuming leader, about how his classmates elected him to positions at AG Junior High School, Central High School, and Davison College, and about how he became an officer in the Army and jumped out of airplanes with the 82nd Airborne Division, or about how he was president of his third-year class at Chapel Hill Law School and later president of the Mecklenburg County Bar. I won't do that either. And finally, I won't lay it on heavy about Ham, the great athlete, about how he was born into a family that could play anything with the ball, and about how he competed well on the gridiron at Central High School and Davison College, was handy with a tennis racket, and a golfer you'd want on your team. Or about how he became a football referee and received the honor to officiate the Shrine Bowl, only later to give up officiating so he could watch his son play football on Friday nights. I won't do any of that. What I will do is talk about three beliefs that guided my father. Hambone, which is the name given to Ham by his grandchildren, believed in optimism. He was an Optimist Club member for 60 years, and he could say the Optimist Creed by heart. Promise yourself to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind, to talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet, to make all your friends feel that there is something in them, to look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true. Hambone walked the walk of optimism every day of his life, and it rubbed off on others, whether he realized it or not. Hambone also believed in charity for those less fortunate. He was a longtime supporter of the Salvation Army for all its good works, especially at Christmas. And boy, did Dad love Christmas. And he instilled in his children and grandchildren the need to give back. Whether it was helping sell Optimist Club Christmas trees, ringing the Salvation Army kettlebell, delivering gifts to those in need, or writing charitable checks, as he had me help him do in recent months. Finally, Hambone believed in committed relationships with his family, friends, and God. He was a loving spouse and a playful friend, father, and grandfather, who was not judgmental and offered emotional support whenever needed. And he found peace and hope in the rituals of the Episcopal Church, because his faith guided him too. In the past week, I've heard and read many kind of superlatives that describe my dad. One of the things I respected about Dad was his work ethic. One of the things I loved about Dad was how easy it was to be in his presence, whether it was playing a round of golf or sitting on the porch having a beer. God knows all this, but I'm a bit worried Guy may not remember how Dad behaves on vacation. His first question will be, what are we going to do today? I don't know what heaven looks like, but if Dad gets to schedule the first 24 hours, it will be a full day that might look something like this. School is canceled and Ham joins a pickup game of touch football in Dilworth. On the first play, he scores a touchdown on a pass from his big brother Jake. He grabs a quick lunch and shares some laughs with the guys at the Kappa Sig House. He runs by the office to work on some county tax revaluation appeals. Hey, remember, this is Ham's perfect day, not yours. He walks the front nine with his Cedarwood friends and the back nine with his pals at Charlotte Country Club. He breaks par for the first time after he gets a hole-in-one on number 17. And when he buys everyone around at the 19th hole, the Davidson Wildcats are on TV competing in the Final Four. That night, Ham gathers around a warm fire with the family and friends he has missed for too long. They laugh, cry, and tell stories. When his parents kiss him goodnight, they say they are glad he's home. When Ham dreams that night, his family dreams with him. He dances with Julia to Smitty Flynn, listens to Jenny play Oh Holy Night on the piano, hikes to a favorite waterfall with Eddie, and tees off with me at Augusta. Oh, and he plays Rummy Cube with the grandkids. In the morning, Ham is up early. He breathes in the salt air as he motors away from the dock in his Grady White. His cooler is full of cheap beer and the fishing rods are rigged. As the boat picks up speed, a mist rises from the water, as if God is pulling up the blinds to show Ham the way under a perfect Carolina blue sky. Last Saturday, Hambone's room was full of family. There were scrapbooks full of clippings and pictures of Hambone everywhere. A soft light offered a serene but hopeful setting. The hope was that Hambone would have a peaceful transition. We told him he could go. Around 2 p.m., an old fraternity brother of his and mentor of mine showed up, took out his guitar, and began to play the old familiar. The mood lightened. We all began to sing. A few songs later, Mom reached over and held Dad's hand. I held the other. What happened next shows that God was in the room, too. Dad's breathing relaxed as the notes drifted upward, and then Dad followed them. A good friend doing God's work sang Hambone into heaven. Some of Dad's last words were about his beloved Wrightsville Beach, where he lifeguarded as a teenager and visited every summer as an adult. It's why God's words in 2 Timothy from the Williams translation of the New Testament are so perfect for a man who loved the water and lived his life as he did. My life indeed is already ebbing out, and the time has come for me to sail away. I have fought the good fight for the good. I have run my race. I have kept faith. Now the crown for doing right awaits me, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day, and not only me, but all who have loved his appearing. Indeed, Hamas set sail, and God assures us that his voyage will be sweet. And when Dad arrives at that big drawbridge in the sky, he may get the question, "What's your name?" "My name is Ham Wade, Lord, but you can call me Ham." The Lord may laugh because the Lord knows what's coming. "How you doing, Ham?" "I'm doing fine. How are you?" I want to thank the listeners for indulging me in that remembrance of my father. He and I spent a lot of times together. It's not always the case when you can continue to be a kid up until you're 61 years old and have someone you can go to for advice like I had the privilege to have. He was always a good friend to me, but always had a very positive attitude that you can, I think, pick up from the remembrance that I read at his memorial services. He did love Riceville Beach, and he did love the water. If you listened to the first season, you'll know the very first episode when I provide a preview of season one. There's a story there about the Cape Fear River, about my dad taking us down that river. So I thought it would be nice to begin season two with a remembrance of him, particularly since he was always very supportive of everything I was doing. I will say this. When I told him I was going to get into podcasting, he said, "All right, well, what are they going to pay you?" I said, "Well, Dad, they don't really pay you to do this." "Well, why are you doing it then?" I mean, he couldn't get his head, couldn't wrap his head around the idea until he started to listen to a few of the episodes. He thought, that's good. I like that. That's fun. He always had an open mind. He always was willing to accept his family members as they were and whatever they turned out to be, which was a good influence for me. And he provided he was one of those lawyers that just wouldn't retire. He worked till he was 86, 87 years old, but he enjoyed going in every day and enjoyed being with his partners and representing his clients and friends. He was a great inspiration to me, and again, I thank you for letting me share this remembrance of him. Now let's talk about season two. Our first episode releases on Tuesday, January the 15th, the same day that our first guest book, published by Simon & Schuster, hits the bookshelves. Author Tommy Tomlinson, finalist for the 2005 Pulitzer Prize in Commentary and longtime local columnist with the Charlotte Observer, reads from The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Smaller in a Growing America. Tommy reads and talks about his lifetime struggle with his weight. I promise you, you will be moved by his story. It's at times humorous and full of wit, and at times full of depth and tugging at your heart, but always, always filled with that human touch that made Tommy a writer worth reading. In addition to reading from and talking about many sections of his new book, Tommy adds a bonus. He reads a story about a Charlotte boy named Sammy Johns who wrote the 1970s hit Chevy Van, and even sings a verse or two. In our second episode, we meet Linda Phillips, an author who writes poetry and novels in verse. Linda is the author of Crazy, a young adult novel in verse about a young girl who truly believes that her mother belongs in a nut house. The story is inspired by Linda's own life when she struggled to come to terms with her own mother's bipolar disorder. The book won several awards and moves at a quick pace. Linda also reads two poems, one with a touch of crazy and another with some furry friends. She also reads from and discusses her recent book, Behind These Hands, about how the life of a teenage piano prodigy is upended when her two younger brothers are diagnosed with a rare disease. Linda shares how she tackles tough issues in young adult literature and how she advocates for better mental health through the National Alliance on Mental Illness. In our third episode, we move from one crazy world to another. We meet author J.D. Dupuy, who co-authored a book guaranteed to make you laugh. It's called Poetic Justice, Legal Humor in Verse. You guessed it, we poke a bit of fun at the legal profession, which is perfectly acceptable for J.D. and me to do since we're both lawyers. J.D. reads poems which focus on all the major episodes in a lawyer's life, starting with law school and ending in the final phase, which the book jokingly refers to as disillusionment. From haiku bursts of snark to rhymes that make nods to the famous poets, J.D. and his co-author M.L. Philpott find the funny in the law. As a bonus, J.D. and I role-play some actual you-won't-believe-they-asked-these-questions in a real legal proceeding. And really, you won't believe the stupid questions these lawyers asked and the surprising answers given by the witnesses. In our fourth episode, we run headlong into a family story of cocaine, race, and ambition in the New South. They say truth is often stranger than fiction, and this true story of a drug dealer's life in Charlotte is no exception. The book is called Money Rock, and in it, author Pam Kelly pulls back the curtain to reveal a Charlotte history that is little known and not discussed enough. Pam's career as an award-winning journalist allowed her to cover the gunfight that led to Money Rock's decline, and then later, his rebirth as a born-again preacher. You may be surprised at what you learn in this historical account that reads like a novel. In our fifth episode, we meet author Gilda Syverson, a poet, memoirist, and, as she says, a member of a large Italian-American family from upstate New York that grows exponentially each year. This large Italian-American family has its roots in Sicily, which led to Gilda's quest to learn more about her past and to her award-winning memoir, My Father's Daughter, From Rome to Sicily. Gilda reads from the memoir and discusses the culture and norms of the old country. It's a trip well worth taking. She also reads two poems, and in the spirit of Valentine's Day, she reads a piece called Racing and Wives and Valentines, which is sure to generate a laugh or two. In our sixth episode, we meet Randall Jones, author of several nonfiction books, including In the Footsteps of Daniel Boone, Before They Were Heroes at Kings Mountain, and From Time to Time in North Carolina. He's also the author of numerous short stories and historical pieces, and an invited member of the Rhodes Scholar Speakers Bureau of the North Carolina Humanities Council. With Randall's help, we deal with the revolution and exploration. Randall reads an inspiring account from the Battle of Kings Mountain, which turned the tide in the Southern campaign to win the war against the King of England and his loyal followers. He also takes us into the backcountry with readings about Daniel Boone and reads one of his short pieces filled with wisdom and humor called The Truth at 13. In our seventh episode, we meet author Rosie Molinari, activist for low-income families and young Latinas, and author of many writings featured in a wide variety of magazines. She's also written two books, which she reads from and discusses on the show. Rosie first reads from her book, Hijas Americanas, Beauty, Body Image, and Growing Up Latina. She talks openly about what it means to grow up Latina and to face the inner conflicts and triumphs for first, second, and third generation Latinas as they come of age in America. Rosie expands on her message of being oneself in Beautiful You, a daily guide to radical self-acceptance. She reads a number of passages from that book that will be sure to inspire. In our eighth episode, we meet Bud Shill, co-author of Not Exactly Rocket Scientists and Other Stories. The book is what it sounds like, fun and entertaining stories about boys doing stupid things. As Pat Conroy said, it's a great book about friendship, growing up in the 50s, and a lost America that will never come again. Bud reads from a number of the stories, including one called The Commissioner, about one of his friends who wrote the infamous Law Review article about the infield fly rule in baseball. This book is a fun romp down memory lane, and whether you were born in that era or not, there will be something to smile, laugh, and cry about in these stories. In our ninth episode, we meet author Nora Gaskin, who takes us behind the scenes of a true crime story about a murder in Chapel Hill in the 1960s with her book Time of Death, which inspired her first novel, Until Proven. Nora then reads from and discusses her recent book, The Worst Thing. With Nora's help and the characters from The Worst Thing, we dive headfirst into the realm of suspense, where there's no mystery about who is the deranged perpetrator, just a lot of angst about how things are going to turn out. Nora's not only an author, but an editor, so she understands how to shape a story. In our 10th episode, author Bryn Chancellor takes us into the world of literary fiction. She starts with a story called All This History at Once, from her collection of short stories that won the Prairie Schooner Book Prize. We then spend most of the show focused on Bryn's book, Sycamore. She reads various selections from the book and talks about how growing up in the Southwest gave her the sense of the place she writes about in the book. It's a mystery about a girl who disappears, but is told in a lyrical way. Among other honors, Brynn is a recipient of the North Carolina Arts Council Fellowship. She teaches writing at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. In the 11th episode, author Kathy Pickens, a mystery writer turned true crime aficionado, reads first from her book about ghostly haunts of Charleston, South Carolina, and finishes with stories about sensational crimes committed over the years in Charlotte. Kathy has won numerous awards for her mystery books, and that experience led to her research and writing about the criminals in our backyard. She reads and discusses stories about murdered bikers, fraudulent evangelists, a serial killer, the infamous Loomis Fargo heist, and a woman tried in the 1920s called Razor Girl. Kathy also discusses crime statistics, the true crime genre, and more. In the 12th and final episode of the season, we spend time with author Ann Campanella, twice recipient of the Poet Laureate Award from the North Carolina Poet Society. Ann reads a poem called How to Grieve, and then follows this poem with readings from and discussion about her award-winning memoir, Motherhood, Lost and Found. Ann reads several sections of the book, which reveal the emotional journey she took with a mother who suffered from Alzheimer's, while at the same time dealing with the difficulty of having a baby given her predisposition to miscarriage. This truly is a story about motherhood, lost and found. Ann is passionate about spreading awareness about Alzheimer's and has been recognized as one of the most influential women in her community in bringing attention to the disease. She is open and honest in discussing the difficulties and strategies in caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's. I hope you will agree that, like the authors before them in Season 1, the lineup for Season 2 is top-notch. Having listened to them, read their stories, and after spending time with them, I assure you that you will not be disappointed with the quality of our guest authors in Season 2. The episodes in Season 2 will be released on a weekly basis, beginning January 15th and continuing every Tuesday thereafter through April 2nd. You can learn more about and see pictures of the authors on our website at charlottereaderspodcast.com and at our Charlotte Readers Podcast Facebook page. We also will post about the episodes on Twitter at Charlotte Reader and on Instagram at Landis Wade. Well, that's it for today. I hope you'll join us next week for our first episode with Tommy Tomlinson, where he reads from The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Smaller in a Growing America. You can help us out by spreading the word about the podcast. We want people to hear what these authors have to say, bring attention to their work. You can do it by going to our website, charlottereaderspodcast.com, and signing up for our email list. You can do it by going to our Facebook page, Charlotte Readers Podcast, and leaving a review. You can also do it by going on Apple iTunes and leaving a review so that the larger universe of podcast listeners can learn about Charlotte Readers Podcast. And if you're into Twitter, go to @CharlotteReader. We're posting there, and you can say something about us too. Or on Instagram, at Landis Wade. Anyway, we're trying to figure this whole thing out. But more than anything, we're trying to get the word out about the authors from this community and what they have to say. It's been a pleasure for me to be a part of this podcast. I've enjoyed Season 1, and I'm excited about Season 2. I hope you'll join us. Until next week, I'm Landis Wade for Charlotte Readers Podcast.